My name is Mike, and I'm an alcoholic. And probably get the qualification out of the way before I get rolling. I got sober January 21st, 2001 in San Francisco, California. And I migrated. I decided not to work anymore after I'd been sober 6 years, and my wife told me that I wasn't going to work, we were moving to Colorado because that's where the grandchildren were. And so now I reside in Fort Collins, Colorado, and it's a wonderful place, and we're having a great time and good AA there. I'm so honored to be asked to speak at FOTS. This is my second time here. I came the second year after we moved here from California, and I was so impressed. And then now my friend Jeff said, "Hey, do you want to talk this morning about step 10? And I said, "No, there's nothing I'd like better in life than to talk about 10. But then, you know, you got to realize that you're talking to a lot of people, so it'll take me a minute to get warmed up, I suspect. What do I like about step 10? I like everything about step 10. And the thing that that's most important to me was that in my early sobriety, you know, when I was taking the steps initially, and I came out of a line of book thumpers in California, and we were going through the book, and we're talking about this every day, and I'm trying to reflect ahead and decide what I'm going to do. So then when I see, you know, just continue to take personal inventory and when we're wrong, promptly admitted it. I was so intimidated by earlier steps, I didn't get too excited. Because I was intimidated by 5 and by 9. And a little bit by 3 because I didn't understand it. But I was not going to get to 10, and it was pretty simple. Every day you just, you know, you did something bad to somebody, you said, "Oh, I'm sorry." And then you left it go. And that's what I thought. And it was clear to me that that was the beginning of the end, that we were going to take this cavalier attitude about our actions every day, and then we would pray and meditate in the privacy of whenever we wanted to do it. And then if we really wanted to, you know, helping others and living principled was an optional thing. And that's how you got through 10, 11, and 12. And much to my chagrin, when my sponsor finally got me through the ninth step, and I'm looking at moving forward into 10, it is that I'm going to have to do these things. And the way that the 10th step reads is it starts off with this thought brings us to step 10, and it's right after all the 9 step promises. And so the thought is that I got to work for it, because that's the last line. It says, yeah, these materialize if we work for them. Oh, so there's something else to do. And then I love that in the first paragraph it says continue 3 times. Continue, continue, continue. And I look on that and I go, well, wait a second. I thought we were ending, ending, ending. I thought this was the wind down, wind down, wind down. See? Instead, it says we're going to continue to take personal inventory and set right new mistakes as we go along. Wait a second. And even in my mind, that said, isn't he talking about 4 through 9 here? And then right behind that, it says, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. And then we vigorously commence this way of living. Oh, so now I've been the way of living. It didn't dawn on me that I'd just been in training to learn what I had to do all the time in order to have a way of living that was going to change me, and I would go through the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism. 4 through 9 were going to be a daily practice. This was what I did. We had just taken this nice journey through our book, learning how to do these things, so that we were now just well-versed enough that we could continue on. Because we now had a whole set of new directions, which was not to watch for whatever you're doing and then say you're sorry, because it said that what I'm going to do is I've entered the world of the Spirit. So I've now had the spiritual awakening at step 10. I'm entering that world. And as a result of that, what is it? And then here's my direction. Alcohol, we hate the directions, don't we? I love promises. I really love promises. And I love the stories because the stories are important, you know. But then you got these directions, you got these conditions, and you got these warnings. And step 10 is about the biggest condition, warning, direction there is in the program, because it's a renewal of what we just learned, and I was trying to forget about it already. And so my next direction is that we've entered the world of spirit, so our next function is to grow in our understanding and effectiveness. It should continue. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. I'm sorry. Our book says I've got to do this forever. This has become my life. This is my new way of life. And what I love so much is this just loops right back around. You know, I'm sitting here thinking I've gotten past three. I never have to go back that way. And step 10 just pushes me right back around. And it's back to my covenant with God. It's like, oh, well, see, what did I say in that prayer? What was I going to do? Am I going to live in God's will every single day? What's this telling me to do? I got to grow in God's will every single day. Is that something that I want to do? Well, I hadn't thought I wanted to do it. But I get a clear direction on where I'm supposed to go. My job is to grow. That goes all the way back to the steps. When I wasn't looking for perfection, but I'm looking for progress. I'm looking to grow. I'm grow in my spiritual reality. We came to that one. I'm getting way too excited here. So then, in order to reinforce that, the next paragraph, or the rest of that paragraph, says that, you know, we continue to watch. And, you know, I read through these things, and there's words that I don't read, and it said continue to watch. And I thought that what I was supposed to do was to, because the short form of the step, it's on the wall, you know, you like to read it on the wall, because it's simpler then. It didn't say about watching anything. It said that I was going to take personal inventory. So my assumption would be that I would do it some other time, but the word watch implies that I'm going to be doing it all the time, that I'm going to watch my actions, I'm going to watch my reactions, I'm going to watch what I do, and I'm going to make that part of my life. And when these occur, not if they occur, when my selfishness, resentment, fear, and dishonesty occur, I'm going to do something about it because it's going to happen. And, you know, I thought I got here and I was pure. This was new Mike. This stuff was all over with. No, I'm locked in. And I've got a new life to lead, and I have to be watching for these things. And it goes all the way back. And it was back when, you know, my favorite word in our big book is vicissitudes. I'm going to get vicissitudes, the ups and downs of life. Bill said, if I'm not ready to do this, then I'm sure that I won't survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. Our book never says that we're going to be happy, joyous, and free for all eternity if we don't understand that there are going to be vicissitudes and high and low spots. And step 10 says, this is what you're going to do. And then it goes through a beautiful little summation of steps 4 through 9 in which I've got to do inventory. I discuss them with someone immediately. That's 5. I make amends quickly. That's 8 and 9. And I go to God at once to remove them. That's 6 and 7. And then my instruction is, then, after I'm dealing with my anxiety, my problems, my vicissitudes, what's my direction? Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Wow. Shucks. Isn't that our solution to everything? Everywhere you go in the big book and you say, you know, I send guys back to look, you know, my men I work with, and I go back and they say, what does it say to do? It says you got to work with others. No, I'm having problems with my wife. Work with others. My kids don't love me or anything. Go work with others. That's what we do. It's not as there's an assumption that after we get through 10, and 10's telling us that's what we do, and then when we get to 12 and we think, oh, well, I've had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, and I made it to the end, so it's optional if I try to help other alcoholics. It's optional if I live these principles every day. No, this is what I do every day. And so now, and we've got this beautiful set of promises here, which I'm not going to read because they're just too beautiful. You know, the beauty is that all the problem has been removed. And that's where I live, because the more important thing to me was that I didn't want to read. I loved reading those. I'm a new person. The problems are gone. The obsession's removed. So now I get to go on, and I have the warnings. And I can't let up on the spiritual program of action, and I can't become satisfied. And I guess that's how I want to end, is that in my years of doing this, and in the men that I've worked with over the time, the problem results that I see, the problems result, and their inability to grasp the program comes when they become satisfied and complacent. And as the years go by, if I've done the steps and I become satisfied and I forget about step 10, then I'm in big trouble. So God bless you and thank you very much.
All right, our next panelist is Juanita Yu from A New Hope Al-Anon Group in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Juanita. I'm a very grateful member of the Al-Anon family groups. This step tells me I have a daily reprieve contingent upon the maintenance of my spiritual life. Daily. I don't know about you, but I don't miss my meals. Right? I'm a pretty good eater, obviously. You know, and so I've got to do something to maintain my contact with God. And daily. And if I don't, I'm going to run into trouble. And this step tells me that what I do is I watch for selfishness, self-centered, dishonesty, and fear. Now, in the past, this is what I've done. I haven't just watched. What I've done is I've put on the combat suit, combat boots, strapped on the AK-47, the ammunition, put on the night vision goggles, and I was on patrol looking for selfishness, self-centered, dishonesty, and fear. Hypervigilant. I know hypervigilant. That's what I did in living with active alcoholism, you know. I'm on patrol. I'm looking. But that's not what the step says. It says I watch. Well, if I'm watching, I'm just going to like sit. I mean, I could be sitting on the top of that mountain and just watching what's going on. And that's all it says. It doesn't say I'm hypervigilant. It doesn't say I'm on patrol. It says I watch. So I had to practice watching. And in order to do that, I have to be present. And if I'm not present, I can't do it. You see, when I'm hypervigilant, I'm always thinking about the past, and I'm always thinking about what's going to happen. And I'm not just present. So I have to watch and just be present. Yesterday morning, I woke up because what this step says is that I do this as I go through my day. I don't wait till the end of the day to do it. As I go through my day, I'm watching. I'm present. I'm aware. So I woke up this morning, I woke up yesterday morning, and I was thinking, here's one of my main character defects. I have a tendency to shut my heart down. And I have a real tendency to do that when I come up here. We were talking about this at a meeting we had last night at our condo up the hill. I have a tendency to shut my heart down because when I come here, there are so many people here that I absolutely love and care deeply about. I've got friends from all over the country. I've got friends from all over the world, and you come here. And it's just too much love. Now, I can give you love. That's not a problem. But to receive it, to receive the love, to me, is just so overwhelming. And your love is so great that sometimes it feels like pain. So I have a tendency to close my heart down. So I woke up yesterday morning, and I said a prayer. And the prayer was, God, give me the attitude you'd have me have. Open my heart, my mind, and my spirit. That means I'm going to let you in. You see, that is me watching for selfishness. I don't want to be hurt. And your love is so great, so powerful, so potent, so big, so overwhelming. It almost hurts. And the dishonesty is that God can't carry me through all that love. Do you know what I'm saying? Now, I always would have said, don't give me the pain. But I always knew that if I don't feel the pain, I don't feel the joy. They go hand in hand. I can't shut down one that I don't shut down the other. So I got to have an open heart. And fear? The longer I'm in this program, the more I know people, and the more I love them, and more people I know. And I watch them come in, and I watch them come out, and I watch our old timers pass away, and with every one, my heart breaks. And so you know I don't want to feel that pain. So I shut my heart. And what I'm saying is that God's not big enough. God can't carry me through this. Well, this step tells me that there is a sixth sense, the God consciousness. If I'm not living today in that God consciousness, that I'm not fully embracing this program, and I'm not fully embracing the love and the protection and the safety and the power of God. It says I'm supposed to grow in effectiveness and understanding. I thought that was just going to come. Do you know there are things I have to do that? I have to continuously work these steps to find out who I'm not, to find out who I am, so that I can help somebody with the truth. With the truth. And then that way I become more effective and I become more understanding, because the more I understand me, the more I understand you. And we're all alike. We're all alike. Not one of us wants to feel the pain. Not one of us wants to be hurt. We want to feel the love. But if we love, we become vulnerable, don't we? It says we're to grow. It says our code is love and tolerance of others. If I don't have that open heart connection, if I don't have that open spirit, if I don't have that connection with the God of my understanding, I'm not going to be loving. I'm not going to be tolerant. I'm going to be the exact opposite. And I'm going to hold you at bay. So I said the prayer, and I come here. And my heart is open and my heart is full. And you get to see me as I am. Warts and all, the good and the bad. You see, because I think I just have to look for the bad stuff as I go through my day. But I also get to watch where I've grown. There was a time when I would come up to this conference, and maybe Saturday night I'd say that prayer. Open me up, God. It took that long. Sometimes that wouldn't happen until Sunday morning. I think that spiritual growth, that I could do it yesterday on Saturday when I woke up. That's progress for me. You know, that's real progress. And you might not think that's a lot, but for somebody like me who is used to building walls to keep you out so that you don't hurt me, it's a big deal. We get to come here and share. You see, because all this step work, it's not just an intellectual stuff. We have to open up our hearts and open up our spirits, and that's how we become truly effective. And there's only one way that I can do that. That's with the power and the grace, the love, and the safety of God. Because otherwise it's too much for me to bear. It's more than I can handle. Because I can't handle the pain and the bad stuff any more than I can handle the joy and the beauty and the love. It's so overwhelming. here's where I learn how to do that. Here's where I learn through these steps that give me an understanding and a conscious contact with the presence of the power that allows me to go and walk amongst you, to be in the world with an open heart, so that I can truly be effective, understanding, and practice our code of love and tolerance. And I have to do this every day. Every day. I can't slack off on it. Can't slack off. Because otherwise, I start to think everything's okay, and I become complacent. And before I know it, I think I'm managing quite well, thank you. And what I'm doing is I'm building the walls one more time, brick by brick. And I don't see you, and all I see is me. I'm glad to be here. God bless you. Have fun.
Our next panelist is Jeanette W. from the Fellowship of the Spirit Group in Thawmore, Australia.
G'day everyone, my name's Jeanette and I'm an alcoholic. And I caught a bit of an allergy here yesterday with cottonwood flowers or something, so my voice is not what it normally is. But I'm really grateful to be here, I'm really grateful to be sober. And in God's grace, I've got a home group, and it's Fellowship of the Spirit Tamil. It's on the Southern Highlands of New South Wales. It's all little villages down there, and I've been sober for nearly 23 years, and it's really nothing I've done, and. So a couple of people have asked me how I got here. I think this is my third conference here. And I think the first one I came to was 2 or 3 years after this started. And I came here via some Indians up in the Yukon. My dad's Aboriginal, and I was I heard a whole tribe of people had got sober up there. And their culture's the same as ours, and I wanted to go up there and find out what they were doing, and so I could go back to Australia and get all the Aborigines sober in Australia. And I ended up in Denver. And it was a long trip. And I met a lot of people that are still here today, you know, Juanita and her husband and other people, and so I guess this program really does work. When I came here, I was really dying. In Australia, we had what a guy in Denver that I met here that I love dearly, Frank McGibbon, he told me that we were two steppers, and it was step one and step 12. And I never really understood step one neither, but I knew how to go and help others by trying to save them. And that really didn't work neither. But, you know, I guess, in a way, it was, you know, God helping me to stay sober by being of use somehow. And anyway, by coming here, you know, I was introduced to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous out of the Big Book. And I mean, I could recite the Big Book. We'd been doing studies back home, but it was all a head job. It was all in the head. And you know, the experiences I've had with going through the Big Book and not studying it, but to have experiences. I never understood that I had a physical craving, which was the most important part for me for step one. I knew I was a drunk, but I never understood why I could never stop from drinking, even when my kids all left home and my marriage broke down and you know, the whole world fell apart. I could never work out why I couldn't stop drinking. I just wanted to be a good person. And, you know, I was very religious. I'd studied theology for 2 years. But I couldn't stop drinking. I was even born again 7 times in 7 churches. And the Bible I read every day had whiskey stains or Berry's Moselle. And and I just loved it. I loved the effect I got from the alcohol. So, you know, it's really about step 10 here today, and I'm currently in inventory in step 4, writing again. And I go through the steps every year. And what happens with me with step 10, usually, it starts to ease off. I stop to watch. And, you know, I start to get a bit dirty on you and I want to pay you back and all this sort of stuff. But if I continue writing my inventory, I seem to stay in a better place. So when I finally, you know, finish my fourth step and I share it with others, we do multi-fifth steps over there, I've created a fellowship in Australia that I never dreamt possible. And, you know, it's as a result of just doing this work and taking back what you people gave me here and working with others. So what happened over there, there weren't many people going through the steps. And so we do workshops, you know, where we can take people through together. And currently we've got two workshops. I've got one with seven Aborigine guys, and they're just starting inventory now, and another workshop with 22 people going through the steps. And it's just starting to get little pockets all around the place. So what I came to see in step 10 was this growing, you know, this growing in understanding. And what I experienced with that, it was growing within. It's not growing out there. It's not doing stuff out there. It's growing within me, and to experience God's power and love. And I've had an amazing experience with the 10-step promises. I love all the promises, but I particularly love the 10-step promises where we've ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, for by now I've returned to sanity. And I thought once I took step 2 that I'd be sane, and I thought I was sane, and it wasn't until I got into step 10 that I could start to see, you know, that things were changing within me. I wasn't out to get you anymore. I wasn't out to pay you back, you know, and I could feel the spirit deep down within me. And I just can't explain. If there's newcomers here, you know, just don't muck around with this program. I tell them back home, if you're not done yet with drinking, get it into you. Get out, you know, get out there and get it into you and have a real good experience with it. And when you're dying, and hopefully if you do get back here, to have an experience with these steps. And so also what I do when I go through the steps, when I get to step 10, and I was taught to do this in the beginning, was to write my step 10 out. And that's been my practice for all those years that I've been doing it. And it's very similar to the fourth step. And I have a 10-step buddy. I've got a few 10-step buddies. I've got a sponsor. I like to be fully accountable to one person that knows absolutely everything about me, that can challenge me, and which my ego doesn't always like. But I 10-step with different people too, to encourage them as well to open up. You know, to have this beautiful open heart and an open mind. And that's, you know, that's what the steps give me today. Not to be fearful. Someone said to me, coming here, you know, are you scared? Are you in fear? And I said no. But possibly 10 years ago I would have been shaking, you know, thinking, God, what are they going to think of me? And today I really don't care. It's like what Juanita said. I am who I am, and I feel the spirit within today. You know, I haven't got a great deal of money, but I seem to get over here every year. I don't come here very often, to Denver, but I go to LA. I do the fellowship at the Spirit turnouts they have over there. And also go down to San Diego, and I want to do a trip down to Guatemala this time. And my man at home said, well, when they kidnap you, don't get them to ring me up for ransom because there's no money. And I, you know, he was sort of half joking about it, but I said to him, aren't we safe and protected in God's care? And that's been my experience. You know, just to be able to go anywhere today and be free of fear and to have a go at things and meet new people. And, you know, we sort of get people to come out from America once or twice a year now and do workshops over there. We don't have the people you have here. We might have workshops with 60 or 100 people or sometimes a bit more. But when speakers come out, they always leave a message. And, you know, we seem to attract a couple of more people to go through the steps. So, you know, it's just the most amazing way of life. I also said a prayer this morning, and I didn't ask God to keep me sober because I wake up sober, but I just thanked him for the beautiful part of the world I'm in at the moment. It's just so different. And, you know, it's quiet and... Is that for me? And I'm raving on. Thank you.
All right, and our last panelist is Matt W. from the Maximum Service Group in Redmond, Washington.
Go there. Good morning. My name is Matt Welly. I'm an alcoholic. My sober date is 11/23/04. My home group is Maximum Service. We meet in Kirkland, Washington on 7:30 on Sunday nights. If you are up in our area, we would love to see you. I have a sponsor. I've always had a sponsor in my recovery. In fact, I am the product of kind, loving, and patient sponsorship. And to each of the men that's had the time and has taken the time to put up with me or sponsor me at times, I owe a debt of gratitude. And so for them, I'm grateful. Jeff, thank you very much for this opportunity. You guys are my family. I'm affiliated, or I get the opportunity to go to Northwest Fellowship of the Spirit every August. That's my first opportunity to come back here and see where it all began. Many of you are familiar faces, and all of you in what you share resonates in my heart. And for that, I'm extremely grateful, because it means that what we're doing, or what was taught to me, is the design for living and the message that you continue to carry each and every day. And it's very comforting for a person like me. The opportunity to speak on Step 10 is very exciting. I think anytime you give me an opportunity to stand in front of a microphone, there's obviously some ego and some pride involved in that, and I dig that. I do. I was sitting with my housemates this morning. I had my book open a few times, and they teased me a little and said, "Are you studying?" I said, "Yeah, I'm studying." And said, "You know, if you don't know it by now, it's really going to be tough to fill 10 minutes." And I said, "I'll do my best." Right. And the truth of the matter for me is that the book is comfortable. And it doesn't matter which page I turn open to, but when I'm a little nervous, and it's not that I'm nervous of the message. I'm sure I'd like you all to appreciate me or to resonate. But it's just the nervous of I don't commonly speak in front of hundreds of people, and this is pretty cool. Thank you for the hour, by the way. That's awesome. I'm really excited about that. When I get a little nervous, I like the big book. It's a design for living. It says early on that it will be the answer, will be the solution, will be help me solve all of my problems. And if my problem is some nervousness, then I'm going to find the answer in here. Back to the part where I had good sponsorship early on. In fact, day one of my sponsorship, the man sat down with me and we talked circle and triangle. We talked principles. We talked some steps. We talked concept. And I said, "What do I need to do between now and then?" And we talked after that meeting, and he outlined for me steps 10 and 11. He gave me an assignment on day one that said pages 84 through 88 every day for the next 2 years. I'm a good student, and I asked a question, and I said, "Why 2 years?" He said, you have to read it until you want to read it. You have to do a lot of stuff here until you get to do everything here. To this day, it's not 7 days a week, but it's usually better than five, but I read this thing every day. I love 84 through 88. It is absolutely the time that I cherish most with my men that I've had the privilege to sponsor. It's hard for me to get pages 84 through 88, which is 10 and 11. I get that. It's hard to get through that in an hour session with them because I want to stop and talk about each word and where they link and what they meant. Not that I've learned it or not that I know it. It's but what you taught me. My experience with Step 10 is ever-changing. Early on, it was simply reading it. While on Step 1 and Step 2 and Step 3, it was just reading it. It was laying out for me, and he told me, I'm just going to give you a target of what we're shooting for. Right? And I love that. I love the idea of putting out in front of my men the opportunity to say, this is what we're trying to be. I'm okay with who you are today, and we're going to get you okay with who you are today, but I want you to know what we're shooting for, and I want you to know what the people that have walked before us do have walked. I want you to see the life that they carry and how they're living it, and this is the stuff that they're doing. So see if you can't emulate that. See if you can't come along for that. See if you can't be educated with that. Because I'm not a guy that takes this from a scholarly standpoint. I'm not a guy that takes this like I took geometry, for instance. Right? It's pretty easy. You sit down with a protractor and a pencil, and they tell you this is the size of the angle, and this is what you can deduct from that, and you learn this class, and it's a subject matter. I don't know what your experience is with Alcoholics Anonymous, but mine is that it's of a learning variety. Step 10 tells me that I need to go out and play with you. I need to go out and be part of life. Our book is full of some verbiage that talks about packing things into the stream of life, and I love that. That excites me. That lights my fire. That resonates in my heart. When I'm going to go out and pack something into the stream of life, when I'm going to go out there and try and live amongst you, when I'm going to go out there and try and carry the message or try and carry God's will, there's an assumption in there that I'm going to do my best, but I need the safety of the other assumption that says I'm a human being. And by my very nature, I am flawed. And by my very nature, I'm going to run into you at times, and it's going to be a great collision, and I'm really sorry for that. That wasn't my intention when I woke up this morning. Those of you closest to me get to feel that most often, right? Those of you that I see once, you may get the kindest man that you've ever met, and you may walk away with a really great impression of me, and I appreciate that. I hope that's a man that I can measure up to be and be on a consistent basis, because there's often times where I don't meet you because you're in the car in front of me, and I really didn't say anything nice about you that morning. I just didn't, okay? I've got some tools on how I can do better. I've got some tools on how I can do different. But what I really have in this book is a permission slip that allows me to go out there and try. It allows me to go out there and live freely. It says, what I really get is a daily reprieve, based on my spiritual condition, right? Based on my maintenance, right? So if I'm maintaining a connection with God, it tells me that it's just newly been established. Whoa, don't get crazy. You don't have this thing figured out quite yet. You just got here. Right? I get to work steps 1 through 9. Boy, you took some of the chinks out of my armor. Boy, you took some of the chinks out of my blade. Right? My sponsor, the kind man that first broke this news to me that I could never drink again, he'd like to talk about a machete, and the machete's just been, I've been hacking through a jungle of life for a lifetime, and I've been cutting rocks with it, and I've been cutting vines with it, and I've been cutting a lot of stuff, and I'm pretty mangled as a tool. And he says, we're going to take 1 through 9, and we're going to take a pretty coarse file to that, and we're going to make you back into a machete. And at the end of 1 through 9, as a result of some really good work and some really good effort and some really tough lessons and some really hard truths, he says, Matt, you've got a shape of a machete again. He says, but that's not what we got here, and that's not what I got from Fellowship of the Spirit. And I love what Mickey said, in that Fellowship of the Spirit is an extension of Alcoholics Anonymous, and everything that I know comes out of this book. He told me that machete could probably stay sober. And he talked to me in terms of freedom, right? Happy, joyous, and free. I'm not a man that was too impressed with sobriety. I was told that was a really neat byproduct of this way of life. I'm grateful for my sobriety. Lord knows I made a mess of my life when it was void of sobriety. But the thing that you had, the thing that I wanted, and the thing that I first touched my soul at Fellowship of the Spirit Northwest was freedom. It was talking about freedom. It was talking about the final words when we closed, the happy road, or the road of happy destiny. You talked about a freedom, and that was liberating. It wasn't liberating for my mind because I still felt like a prisoner that couldn't drink ever again. And it wasn't liberating for my actions because you told me I was curbed by these bumper rails where I wasn't allowed to collide into people at free will and be a tornado running through your life anymore. But it was liberating for my soul and my spirit. It was liberating to allow me to go out there and just say, you know what, I get to be me for the first time. Take it or leave it. Love me or hate me, I'm me and I'm okay. My step 10 has been an evolution and I'm doing something new. I have a new sponsor. Early on, it was to constantly watch, and I appreciate everything the panelists have had to say. My experience resonates with many of what they, or much of what they said. Early on, I just watched, and it was solitude watch, and I would be accountable to my sponsor, and if I would take stuff to him in step 10 on a consistent basis, he would say, let's write some inventory. And most things that were involved in conversation around 10 went back immediately to 4, and I was writing a 4-column inventory a lot. And I filled pages and pages. We called it grid. I filled pages and pages of grid. I filled notebook after notebook. And for the first 3 years, I wrote a lot of inventory. And it dealt with divorce, and it dealt with ex, and it dealt with money, and it dealt with never drinking again, and it dealt with what you thought of me at meetings, and what dealt with what I thought of you at meetings. Man, maybe I'm just a slow guy, but after 3 years of that, I came out of it a little bit different. I've had another sponsor that didn't do much with 10, and there was years in there where I got to drift a little bit. Now I continue to watch myself, I continue to read my pages, and I continue to try and be part of something, but the accountability wasn't there. And what I've got today is a new man in my life that allows me to stay very accountable. And I carry a pad in my pocket, and I write down stuff on a daily basis. I write down stuff on an hourly basis when I need to and when the time is right. And I take it to him, and he says, some of the stuff we just blow over. And he says, yeah, man, that's going to happen. That's going to happen. You're right. I got you. I guess my point in conclusion is that step 10 has allowed me to go out there and make new mistakes. I'm not allowed very often to get a free pass and make the same one over and over again, but I get to make new ones. And through those new ones, I get to learn. And through those new ones, I get to learn who you are and who I am. So, God bless all, and I love you. Thank you.
All right, the microphone's now open for discussion. We still have 20 minutes or 15 minutes left, so.
Hi, my name's Jim Ekblad, and I'm an alcoholic from Davenport, Iowa. Greetings and salutations. My home group is Big Book Study meeting in Bettendorf, Iowa, 6:30 on Tuesday nights. It's an open meeting. Come one, come all, come often. I've been living in a state of exploded grace since October 27th, 1988. For that, I'm grateful. My experience with Step 10, very quickly, as much like has been said with our first panelists, was I used to think it was a license to be a jerk. Oh, cruising through life, unintentional. By the way, I'm sorry I hurt you. Sounds like how I used to act. So today, it's much different. Lack of power is my dilemma. Doesn't mean I don't have a lack of responsibility. And it's how you folks have eloquently stated it. This step 10 gives me directions on how to be intentional. Now, God gives me a lot of word pictures, and the word picture for me for step 10 is it's like virus protection, right? And you fire up your computer, you got all those programs that are running. And I have programs that are running. We all have programs that are running right now. We're seeing, drinking, digesting. So, lack of power is my dilemma. So I can't run that virus protection because my disease, the mental part of my disease, is rooted in self-deception. So I need this sixth sense, as has been said. I need this God consciousness. And to do that, I need some direction. And it gives me a whole bunch of real good direction, like the prayer that's in there, especially. I used to just do the second half of it, thy will be done, not mine. The first half, that's real ambiguous, and I love ambiguity because it gives me wiggle room. The first part says, how can I best serve thee? How can I carry your vision into all of my activities today? So today, I seek that power greater than myself on sometimes a minute basis. And I get that. I don't get slapped in the face when I've been dishonest. There's just a little tap on my shoulder. And that wasn't completely true, was it, Jim? Shucks. Okay? I don't intentionally make mistakes today, but I still am a human being, and as you said. So I said all that to say this. What culminates that, how I make that simple, so I'm not running so much through there, is today, to be intentional, I have the option. I have the choice to either be a host to God or a hostage to my ego. Step 10 gives me the opportunity to be a host to God. Thank you.
My name is Marie, and I'm a very grateful Al-Anon. I hear a lot in the rooms when they talk about 10 steps. They talk about, well, I offended somebody and I have to go apologize to them. But the origin of the bad behavior, I believe, starts in the mind. And the 10th step is beautiful because it's talking about that part of us. So that there's a real possibility that you don't have to go to the bad behavior to do this 10th step. I have a wonderful filter so that I don't end up usually, my husband might disagree with this, but usually I don't lay my insanity out to other people. I'm a real good Al-Anon, and I hold it all in, and I kind of implode with fear, selfishness, self-seeking, and dishonesty. But I have a need to do the 10th step because I still have that insanity. So I think we do ourselves a disservice when we just talk about the overflow of the emotions, the overflow of the insanity that we have, when it touches somebody else, and then we go apologize to them. We're doing an in disservice to ourselves, because what we're doing is we're constantly, constantly drinking poison. And the 10th step is there so that we don't, we can, I've heard a lot of people talk about, that they've been in here and they're brewing inside this insanity, but they're acting like they're really doing this program. And the 10th step is the solution for that. It's the place where you can pull that insanity up and give it to someone and say, this is happening, and the benefits of the 10th step are just amazing. So thank you.
Good morning. I'm Candace, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic from the Steamboat Seagulls up in Steamboat Springs. Thursday was a very, I want to say, my first reaction is to say it was a very bad day. But that's my alcoholism, it's not my fault response. It was a very learning day for me. I ended up having to get a new battery for my car, and then I ended up, and I swear I wasn't speeding, but he clocked me at 73 73 and a 50, I don't know what it was. Anyway, it was a 13-point ticket, and he said it was a 4-point ticket, $69, but if I paid it within 20 days, it was a 2-point ticket, still $69. So I figured that Colorado needs the money more than they need me off the road. But I'm going to use that as a learning experience and try to be not so heavy, right-footed. I'm left-handed, left-eyed, left-handed, left-footed, and my right foot is kind of heavy on the road. So God used it as a learning experience. And obviously, I wasn't supposed to be here at 3 when I thought I was supposed to be here. I was supposed to be here at 9:30. And thank you very much for being here. I love you.
Hi, my name's Mickey. I'm an alcoholic. I actually don't remember who said it, but there was a philosopher who said, the unexamined life is not worth living. And so if I travel in a cloud, what happens is I'm always bumping around and bumping off of somebody, and I'm wrecking my own life, and I don't know why, because I'm in this miasma. I'm just in this cloud. So the 10th step gives me, watch for these four things. It's the morality of Alcoholics Anonymous. Am I being selfish, dishonest, frightened, or whatever else that I'm not examining at the moment? But anyway, I will make this guarantee. You know, that it just seems in our program that there are two optional steps, 10 and 12. And, you know, people look at me like, what the heck are you talking about? But many times I think we treat it that way. It's like, well, do you do 10? Yeah, I review my day at the end of the day, and it's like, that's 11. Do you do 10? You know, and what's the big block for 10? It says, when these things come up, we ask God at once to remove them, and then we do the unthinkable. We discuss them with someone immediately. There goes the 10th step. And the ego's answer to that is, well, I'd be on the telephone all day. So that means I don't have to do it at all. And I find, and I sponsor a man who for 9 years in Alcoholics Anonymous did not do a 10th step. And he is the most, and I then started sponsoring him, and he is the most faithful 10th stepper of all the people I sponsor. And I asked him after a while, I said, can you imagine having a program without the 10th step inventory? And he said, no. So here's a guarantee. We're talking about promises and all that. This is a member's guarantee. If you will do the 10th step faithfully, as it says in the big book, it will revolutionize your life. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. I'm Kit. I'm an alcoholic from Santa Fe. The 10th step to me is another chance for inventory. And for 20 years, I failed at taking a good four-step inventory until I got a sponsor. And he's a very high-energy guy from New York, and he said, the way I did it is I sat down for 17 hours and I didn't move until like it was all done. And at that time, I couldn't sit still for an hour, you know, so I went to his grand sponsor, my grand sponsor, and this guy is like 6'8", a stone cutter, and talks like this, you know. And I just said, man, you know, I'm having trouble with this inventory. What do I do? And he goes, well, you're a chef, right? And I went, yeah. So you do an inventory every month? And I went, yeah. He goes, tell me how you do it. And I said, well, I go and I've got a list and I go into the walk-in and I check things off and then I go into the storeroom and I count the cans and he goes, what, like cans of beans? And I go, yeah. And he goes, do you count the beans? And I went, no. And I got it. I just have to count the cans. So at the end of each day, I just count the cans. And someday maybe a sponsor will give me a can opener and I'll start counting the beans, but not yet. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Joanne. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, Joanne. And I want to be honest here. I really don't do 10 steps at night because I usually don't get pissed off when I'm going to bed. I get mad during the day when I'm dealing with people. And I think every single one of these things I've been to, we got here yesterday around 11, somebody in each one has talked about what happens when they're driving. Every single one of them, somebody brought up driving. And I just, like, I don't drive right before I go to bed. Never. But I'll be doing 10 steps, like, during the day. And when I'm really upset, I can't hold on to it till I go to bed. It's just not, it doesn't work for me. Because if I'm upset, like, the first thing I do is, you know, I'll try and pray about it or try and, you know, turn it over. But sometimes I'm still 2, 3, 4 hours later, I'm still burned up about it. Yesterday on the way up here, we got to where I-25 and I-70 meet, and some people in like the middle lane just decided this is a good place to stop. it was really scary. I had to slam on the brakes. I had two passengers with me. I was shaking for a while. It was really, really scary. But if I don't stop, like, if I don't start, like, praying right then and there, I'm going to be a mess. And I think I hit my knees when I got to the hotel room. I was like, I got out of the hotel room, got the bags down, and I hit my knees. I was so grateful that we didn't hurt other people. I didn't hurt other people. People didn't hurt us. It was just, it was scary, you know. But it does mention, you know, in the big book about throughout the day we pause when agitated. And that's the part of the 10th step that I really, really need to read and reread, is to pause when agitated. So thank you.
Hi, everybody. Erica Maynard, alcoholic from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Home group, full measure speaker group, Friday night, 7 o'clock. Come see us. Sober continuously since December 30th, 1996, and grateful to be here. 10th step changed dramatically for me when I completed my amends. It was a struggle for me when I still had unfinished amends out there. Once I completed my amends, boom, something happened and I became much more present. As did my 11th step. Could see myself much better. I don't know what that is other than powers on board. Lack of power is my dilemma, and it's been referenced here a lot, thank God, because this is not a head job. Like you said, if I could do it, I would have done it a long time ago. And so what I've been able to experience in Alcoholics Anonymous cumulatively, progressively, over the process of, you know, 16 years sober and working and reworking and reworking and reworking the steps, is that I developed this observer on board, this real power that I can access that develops this space between me and my reaction, that develops this space where I can notice it welling up in me because my troubles arise out of myself, which means they're already in there. And when they start to come up, I can go, oh, I'm feeling a little jealous here. Or, oh, I think that's fear. That's fear. And at that point, that's my point of power where I can continue to, as Jim from Iowa said, that he could, worship that fear and go into that and become the reaction and just, or I can go and worship God. And I can submit, but I am not a submission girl. That does not come naturally to me. I don't know about you, but I'm a fighter, and I want it all, you know. And so I don't submit naturally, but that's what this program is all about, is letting go. So I will tell you that if I am telling you the story, I'm not doing a 10th step. Because I have this problem where I really, in our book it says, on page 61, it says, I may be somewhat at fault, but I'm quite sure they're more to blame. And sometimes I don't see that for a few times. You know, I may be mad at somebody for a few times before I start to see, oh, I mean, I wrote inventory one time. It was actually a 10-step inventory because it was during the day, and just a quick one over three different bosses at the same job over a period of 5 years. And it was the third time that I wrote inventory that I realized, oh, I'm the common denominator. And I realized that I really think they're more to blame. And I was still telling people the story, and I would still, when I would, you know, write inventory, I would write a lot in the second column, because the more I can get you on board with me, the more you can see how really right I am. And it's not about being right, you know. It's really not. So I'm really blessed to have a power today that you've shown me how to gain access to this power, where I don't have to be crazy all the time. I still get goofy, but I don't have to act on that most of the time. And most of the time, it's so small compared to what it was even a few years ago. You know what I mean? So thank you. God bless.
Thank you to everyone who shared. By group conscience, the Fellowship of the Spirit Conference does not close each meeting with the Lord's Prayer. Instead, we encourage that the entire conference be treated with an attitude of continuous prayer, and then we will then say the Lord's Prayer together at the close of the conference on Sunday. Please help me close this meeting by joining hands for a moment of silence. Let us share our spiritual experiences and strengths with each other so that we may grow together in greater understanding and love.
I'm all about being a part of the whole, so I say we go down.